There are some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a large unexpected inheritance. An always-on-the-verge-of-death phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone, up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard, so you can get a new one. Just trade in any phone from our top brands on any unlimited plan. With new line on my plan. Additional terms apply for trade-in and pay off your phone offer. See Verizon.com for details.
Hello and welcome to Bend the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome back to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Samwell 3 of A Storm of Swords. Matt, how are you?
Hey man, I am doing good. We attempted to record last week.
Yes, we did.
Jimmy told me no because I was sick, and I did record an episode like a day later of my video game podcast. Box Trick, which you can go listen to that and see how terrible I sounded, and then try to imagine it even worse, which is what I sounded like the day before. We literally popped on and Jimmy was like, no.
It sounded so bad. I mean, I thought you had tuberculosis.
I felt like okay. Like I felt good, but you're just like, no. And then when I was editing that other podcast, which was a day later, and I felt even that much better, I was like, oh yeah, I must have sounded like miserable.
You sounded strained. I mean, it just sounded painful, and I was like, man.
Yeah, I don't get sick very often, but I just got hit with it, you know, the
runny nose. You have a kid now, so you will be getting sick more often.
Yeah, well, I also am somebody who I don't really leave the house that often, but now, hey, you know, we're going to doctor's appointments and swim lessons and the other kids, all the other deals.
That sounds exhausting.
Well, we're doing the swim lessons twice a week, and it is kind of a lot because it's like right in between. You know, we get up from nap, we gotta get in. She's mobile now, by the way. And so it's just like literally all of my day now is like, no, okay, can't get over there. And then I set her down, and then she's like a wind up toy. And then she just turned like the dog dish. That's what she really wants to get into right now is the dog dish. Like, I'm just like, oh, you just can't do that.
So I have to like reason with them, dude.
So like, I get up in the morning, I feed the dog, then I have to put all the stuff in front of the dog. It's, you know, it's great. I love it. Actually, it's great. You know,
but good. I'm glad.
A new part of life.
A new phase.
What do you do now? I keep my daughter from getting in the dog dish. That's it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, grabbing electrical cords. No, you can't chew on the electrical cord. You know, and she cries, and it's a whole big deal.
Which is so unfair, you know.
I know. You know, it's like, no, you cannot stick your... Actually, most of our electrical outlets are covered up. The house is pretty childproof.
Yeah, things have gotten easier to do childproofing with, which is good.
Yeah, but how are you, man? How's it going? How is...
Doing all right. I had a horrible muscle strain in my back earlier this week. I, like, worked out and then went to swing some golf clubs and just, like, felt like I got folded in an SUV third row seat getting folded and couldn't move for, like, a whole day. Like, Monday, I literally didn't move. I was on my back all day long.
You're progressing into your... early to mid 30s, which is totally different than your early 30s. Let me tell you.
Yeah, it just keeps getting worse.
No, it does.
What is up with this?
It's a phase because I'm now in my mid to late 30s.
We're not that far, but I'm what, 34? You're 35, right?
No, I'm 36. I'll be 37 this year.
God, you're so old.
So old. I'm telling you, man. It like there's literally every phase is totally different. I mean,
it's unfair because I feel so much wiser than I was when I was in my early 20s. And if had I known what I had then, you know, I know everyone says this, but like it is kind of a cruel game life plays.
I know. That's why listen to the advice of your elders. That is one, you know, that's the best thing. So now it's like when my dad or mom tell me something, it's like I'm paying attention because I know I'll be in their boat someday, you know.
And so yeah, as long as it's not about politics, right?
Oh yeah, 100%. Yeah, we're on pretty. I'm all for everybody having whatever political views they want. But yeah, my mom, we're on pretty polar opposite sides of the spectrum on that one.
I prefer whenever it's more arguments about Westerosi politics. That's absolutely. Always more fun. I mean, also, you know, the listen to your elder thing is quite true in A Song of Ice and Fire too. I mean, I think that's one thing George does exceptionally well with the Catelyn chapters.
That's what we talked about last Not last week, but the week before, yeah.
Yeah, even some of the older characters that we hate, like Alistair Thorne, he's not always wrong.
Right. He might see, he might secretly be a John supporter. We don't know yet. We're not there yet.
What an interesting character.
Ah, so good. Book and the book version is so different because he's
better. Though the actor did a great job. The actor on the show did such a good job.
Phenomenal. Yeah, you know, and that's a character too. I was thinking about you know, it's like when you think about like the top five, you know, eventually might do a top five biggest characters who will have a bigger impact on wins than they did in the show. It's like, oh, you know, last week time we talked about Lady Stoneheart because of the Catelyn chapter.
Certainly.
But I mean, Alistair Thorne's up there because huge difference.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, I can already tell you, John Connington makes the list. I mean, John Connington is just not in.
Yeah. I mean, there's the big ones. Yeah. I mean, Lady Stoneheart, Young Griff, John Connington.
Euron.
Yeah, yeah. Alistair Thorne's got to be up there too.
Victarion. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. We'll have to do a top 10 characters who will have a bigger impact.
Underutilized in the show might be a good way of saying it.
Yeah. Well, some of them weren't even utilized at all.
Yeah. Pissed me off.
Yeah.
Made me
well, awesome. Hey, first of all, before we dive into the chapter today, Jimmy and I did just record a Patreon episode. We talked about doing this last time. It's on the Grand Weirwood conspiracy. It's like an old Reddit thread. And I love those because anytime you could find something from like that's not influenced by Game of Thrones even or House of the Dragon, it's really cool to kind of see like what people were thinking about beforehand.
Yeah.
And pretty interesting stuff, man. It might not be the Weirwoods network, but might be a singular Weirwood. That was pretty cool. Yeah, that was a pretty cool theory, and we did a discussion after that. So if you guys want to, you can check that out. But with that, Jimmy, let's dive into today's chapter, which is Samwell 3. A little bit shorter of a chapter here, but still
a lot of good stuff in it.
Yeah. So Sam and Gilly have reached what appears to be White Tree. When Sam studies the carved face of the Heart Tree for a moment, he admits to himself that it is not the face he and his brother saw when they started out on the ranging. Nor does he remember its red eyes weeping blood. In parentheses, it has sap. It's blood. Sam prays earnestly to the old gods to protect them. He and Gilly camp in one of the wildling huts for the night, but Sam is woken by the shapes moving within. The corpse of Smallpaw comes after Sam, and he tries to stab it with the obsidian dagger, but it shatters upon contact with Paul's chainmail. Despairing, Sam thrust a burning stick from the campfire into the White's mouth, setting it on fire. Outside the hut, the Whites begin to surround Gilly and her infant son after killing their horse. Thinking all is lost, a raven lands on Sam's shoulder, and suddenly thousands of ravens fly from the branches of a weirwood tree to tear the Whites to pieces. The raven, perching on Sam's shoulder, speaks, telling him to go, and he and Gilly begin to run south. But without their horse, they fear they'll be overtaken by Whites. Suddenly, a voice calls out, "Brother, here." From the falling snow appears a man dressed in all black, astride a great elk. When Sam reaches up from the man's bare hand, Sam notices his hand is black and cold as ice. We've made it cold.
Yeah, this is so good. You know, also, we just went through Jamie's dreams, right, and the weirwoods, and we just did the big weirwood theory on Patreon, but this is so good. I mean, the foreshadowing of the eyes bleeding on the weirwood tree is like, okay, that's different. Like that wasn't happening prior. And then we see all this magical stuff happen in this very short chapter. Humongous. I would like to say, I'm just getting out the gate, Matt. I'm not gonna play around with it. I think Cold Hands is Sir Dunk the Tall. Okay, that's my first assertion. My second assertion is that George is giving us the description of the hand being black and cold as ice and then calling him Cold Hands, and the idea that, oh, it's been frostbitten to its decay. But I told you, I don't agree with that. I actually think Sir Dunk the Tall's hands were burned. I think they were burned at Summer Hall, and that is why his hand is black. It just so happens to look like it would be frostbitten. It's kind of a cool little play on the elements there. And then the other thing is that 100%, I think that this kind of points to the idea that Cold Hands and Blood Raven are working together. We know Cold Hands says a friend, right? Like there's a friendship there. We know Bloodraven and Dunk had a relationship at one point in the series. All the while, Dunk and Egg of novellas are being written about at this time. Dunk's a massive human being. Him riding an elk would definitely work. So for me personally, I think he's Dunk the Tall.
Agree. Yeah, I 100% agree. We've talked about this at length many times. We did it. We did a Song of Ice. We did a Night of the Seven Kingdoms breakdown, right? We did a Iceberg, and that was one of our theories on there. You can check that out on that Iceberg theory. You know, and I was thinking a little bit more about Cold Hands, obviously, as we're reading this chapter and we go into it. And one of the things that you and I don't think we've really discussed, and I don't see a lot of other people discuss, is like the nature of Cold Hands, right? Because it's always like, is it Benjen? It's always like the, anytime you see a lot of discussions online or view videos, it always comes down to who is he? Who is Cold Hands is the question. But I think there's a kind of more interesting question. Theory when it comes to Cold Hands, and more like, what is he? Because if you look at the show version, it's Benjen, right? And he's clearly saved by the Children of the Forest, Bloodraven. We don't know exactly. I don't remember actually if he says like the children found me. He has like one conversation with, you know, he has like one conversation with Bran, and then
I don't have much recollection.
And then he shows up and saves John, and John's like, Benjen, and then he dies. That's it.
Well, I jettisoned it from my brain once George had been his note to his editor said it's not Benjen. I just jettisoned it from my brain. I'm like, okay.
But let's even take that it's Duncan the Tall as an example. So obviously, you know, the theory I think for that is that Duncan gets burned at Summerhall. He goes to Castle Black because who knows, maybe it's a prophetic thing, a Bloodraven calling to him. I mean, clearly, you know, something happens here with all these ravens, and I don't know that it's exactly just Cold Hands doing this. I think, you know, it's probably Brennan Rivers, Bloodraven, could be future Bran. And that's kind of something else we talked about, is like time and how it works within that Patreon theory we just did. But you look at this and he's almost like a white, but he's not exactly a white.
Yeah.
Right. And I think that's something that's kind of interesting, because he clearly has, like, he's sentient. He can talk, he can think, even if it ends up being Benjen or, you know, whatever, he clearly is his own person, as opposed to like the whites that we see that, right, the Night King controls, although there isn't a Night King in the books. I mean, there's the Night's King, but there's not like we see in the show that like one White Walker figure.
Big baddie.
Totally different. Yeah, there are White Walkers, but you know. So what's kind of different is that so if like the Children of the Forest did create the White Walkers, and then like the White Walkers create the whites, is this something that's kind of different? Is Cold Hands kind of different? Because he seems to have intelligence. He can talk, as opposed to just being like a nice zombie. Or is it more of like the nature of who creates you? Right. Whereas like the White Walkers just want an army of the dead, as opposed to maybe the Children of the Forest need agents. But why aren't there more of them? Is another question. Was it some sort of like ceremony? Maybe what, you know, like, and again, you know, the books could be different. If we don't know 100% sure that the books, and then you go back to that, we talked about this in some of our World of Ice and Fire stuff. If you go back to any of that, you and I have talked about more of the idea that the White Walkers in the books appear to be their own thing, like their own species that has existed well before, like just in like separate to the Children of the Forest. The show shows us that they created them. Mm-hmm. So maybe it was like an imperfect magic, because it is possible that the Children of the Forest could still have created them as a response to the invasion of the, you know, the Andals and everything. So like that could still happen. And we might learn about that in Winds of Winter. So if that is the case, then maybe this is more what they were trying to do, and they've perfected it now. And maybe the White Walkers themselves, maybe it was the first time they tried it. And if it does go something like the show, then that could be the case there.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to say without the context of if there is
a who driving, it is.
Yeah, who it is, right? Like that's the hardest point to go with. But one thing we do know in the book, right? And I kind of want to point to this, is that Blood Raven, Three-Eyed Crow, whatever, is a true entity in the world that controls things, right? That is attempting to control things.
So happens right here in this chapter.
here's a question. Is Cold Hands just some random dead ranger that is being warged into by Blood Raven?
Oh, that's a very good question.
Like, is he jumping from the flock of ravens into Cold Hands, or like somehow doing both? You know what I mean? Like, that's possible.
100%. Because we see Bran.
And Bran's a warg.
Right.
He wargs into Hodor.
Right. But I will say that is also kind of the difference. And that's one of those things I think that it's tough. I think that's one of the things that makes Bran different from Blood Raven.
Yeah.
Because we don't know that Blood Raven can warg. And in fact, I would actually argue that Blood Raven can't warg.
Okay.
Unless he's warging into those ravens.
Well, who's to say that whenever you get taken into the Weirwood, that isn't like part of the package?
Yeah, I know, exactly. You have to kind of separate the magic, because I think that's the thing that makes Bran so special, is that Bran is a green seer and a warg. I think that's one of the things that probably makes him appear to be like, even I think will make him to be like better than Blood Raven.
Yeah.
Right. Is that, oh, Bran also has this power. And so it's so, just because I have the nature of everything, I feel like that's kind of the thing, is like the and it could be the tree itself, because what we see of Brandon Rivers in the cave seems like, oh, maybe he is being controlled by the tree and not the other way around.
Right. And right? I mean, that's been a big discussion, is like, you know, Three-Eyed Crow to Blood Raven, the Raven, everything's up for grabs. I'm of the opinion that there's multiple entities vying for control of this timeline. I mean, that's kind of where I'm at. We talk about this a little bit in the Patreon episode, but all of it is very much present here, and none of it becomes any clearer in this chapter, because Samwell is praying and hoping, you know, but there's references to all different types of gods. And the interesting thing is that whenever he finishes his prayer, you know, you have a white in front of you. So who's to say that the Great Other isn't some sort of entity, or they're being driven by an entity, you know, some sort of cosmic horror thing, right? But well, you get the ravens, right? You end up getting a white there, and then you end up getting Cold Hands. Now, just because and I'm going to completely contradict myself, but Cold Hands, who's to say that Cold Hands isn't being controlled by somebody else as well, but at the time it's just willing to work with Blood Raven in these ravens? Like I don't know, there's just so many things to consider, and none of it gets any clearer. And this is why George's work is so fun to talk about, because he gives you like some more evidence, but the evidence points to many different directions.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe gods were hearing Sam's prayers and all of them showed up, at least in the area, right? I mean, and also we cannot ignore the fact that the weirwood is bleeding, or sap, as they say, but you know, we think it's blood. Weirwoods, anytime in a scene, anywhere, weird things happen.
Yeah, no, agreed.
Totally supernatural.
Yeah, and I want to read this. This is a breakdown on the, we like to pull up the Song of Ice and Fire reread Reddit, and these are all from 9 years ago. So we're talking well before some of this stuff, you know, happened in the show. This was 2012. So this was like right around when Game of Thrones started.
Dang.
Yeah. So this person says, first time being able to, or he says, participating. She was better at making fires. He could never seem to get the kindling to catch. At least in the last time he tried to strike a spark off flint and steel, he managed to cut himself on his knife. Gilly bound up the gash for him, but his hand was stiff and sore, even clumsier than it had been before. He knew he should wash the wound and change the binding, but he was afraid to look at it. Besides, he was so cold that he hated taking off his gloves. So this passage nicely sums up how Sam sees himself. It's all self-loathing. He thinks he's inept, clumsy, and afraid. In reality, he's the one protecting the mother and the child, leading them south through the snow on foot. He survived the first traitorous brothers and has killed more others and whites than anyone in living memory. His father really did a number on his self-esteem. And then we're going to talk about the gods. But I do like that little passage because I think it is a big point to take away from this
great
chapter.
Great characterization.
Right. Because so much of this chapter, like when you're reading, when by the time you're done, you're like, oh, my God, cold hands, magic, all this stuff. But there's a really good amount of Sam character development in this chapter.
Yeah. And it's also an unreliable narrator because we're supposed to believe Sam when he hates on himself. But in reality, if we look back out of his POV, we're like, dude, Sam, you're incredible. Like,
Sam is by far one of the best.
I mean, and he will continue to do miraculous things. I mean, yeah. I've told you, I think that he's the one who's going to end up killing Euron with an arrow through the eye. I've talked about this.
Much like, what's his name in shooting Smaug in.
Yeah. And also Euron, Sauron, their banners is very reflective of each other, actually. And then Sam, the only thing he does somewhat okay at the Night's Watch is he shoots an arrow. He's still pretty bad at it, but it's like the one they're like, well, at least he can kind of shoot an arrow. And then his house banner is an arrow. I mean, there's a lot of stuff there. Sam is going to be, and this is why I always argue when people are like, oh, this series is nihilistic, it's depressing, there's no heroes. It's like, no, the heroes are just people you would not expect, especially when this was written in the time in fantasy. You know, hobbits were unexpected heroes as well. But George is going in a very different direction. This is still heroic fantasy. It's just that the hero happens to be an overweight guy whose dad hates him, you know, which is pretty, I mean, George has said it's his write-in for himself, which I think is, I don't know if George's dad hated him or anything, but like, it's kind of interesting to see. And I'm sure that this is probably therapeutic for George in some ways, but yeah, amazing characterization. And that's what I love about A Song of Ice and Fire. It always feels so balanced to me, like between the world building, between the plotting, between the characterization, like, he's able to kind of make it all work in this big melting pot of this epic that we love talking about so much.
Oh yeah. It's great. I want to continue on here. So this is where it starts talking about Sam praying, right? So Sam sank to his knees. Oh gods, hear my prayer. The seven were my father's gods, but I said my words to you when I joined the watch. Help us now. I fear we might be lost. We're hungry too. And so cold. I don't know what gods I believe in now, but please, if you're there, help us. Gilly has a little son. That's all. That was all he could think to say. The dusk was deepening, the leaves of the weirwood rustling softly, waving like a thousand blood red hands. Whether John's God heard him or not, he could say. And then the last verse, you know, there's that song they sing. The seven gods who made us all are listening if we should call. So close your eyes, you shall not fall. They see you, little children. Just close your eyes, you shall not fall. They see you, little children. And then just before Small Paul attacks, gods, give me courage, Sam prayed. For once, just give me a little courage. Just long enough to hear her get away. Given how this chapter ends, I think it's reasonable to hear which gods answered.
Well, also, how significant does this make him kneeling with John in front of the old gods? Remember back when they swore their oaths, he went with John to do that.
Yeah,
that matters. Like it maybe does. that is whenever the weirwoods finally saw Samwell Tarly and said, oh, okay, we got something here, right? Like that plugged him into the network. I mean, dude, all of this matters. You know, that's why when people be like, oh, you know, this scene was a little bloated and stuff, it's like George is very specifically putting things in that he wants to tie back to. And Samwell even thinks about kneeling with John. We're supposed to take that as a moment to go, ooh, okay, there's something there. There's something here with these weirwoods. I think it's really big. And that whole, like, give me courage thing is so interesting because, like, could you make an argument that this moment was manufactured by Blood Raven to help build courage within Sam, so later on he can use him for a bigger purpose, like slaying Euron?
And think about what he's saying. Like, and I think that's one of the coolest lines, and honestly, the entire series, right? Mm-hmm. Is Sam is about to be attacked by a monstrous white, a literal monster. And what he's praying for isn't to, like, save me or defeat the enemy or any of these things. He's praying for courage. He's like, give me courage long enough for her to get away. Like, I can be the distraction so they can live.
Yeah,
like, that's totally different than, like, that's a selfless, in a way.
That's a hero. is right. what it is.
Yeah, that's like a selfless, you know, almost sacrifice where he's like, just give me the courage to be able to sacrifice myself.
It's the Gandalf moment with the Balrog or whatever.
Yeah, it's so good.
Fly, you fools, right?
Like, yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah. Not just save her. He's like, I'll take care of her getting away, but like, help me to stay strong. So good.
I love Sam, dude. People always complain about Samwell chapters, but he's so important to the story.
Every Sam chapter is pure fire. They're all
amazing. Awesome. We see Cold Hands here, right? We get the Blackgate. Like, Samwell's such an important lens for the story, in my opinion. Also, I do believe that there's something else in this chapter with Samwell that we're supposed to take away from this.
Go ahead. Yeah.
He goes to stab Small Paul with the obsidian dagger and it breaks, and the only way to kill it is with fire. And I think this is alluding to the idea that if the White Walkers are able to armor up and have some defenses, that it's not going to be as easy as just getting all the obsidian that we can and marching in and start slashing them. We're going to need fire. Matt, who has some fire? Oh, I know. Daenerys Targaryen and her three dragons. And it shows the necessity for Daenerys's dragons to play a role in the final battle. Like, that is, it's, this is like a micro example that's going to happen on the macro later. Yeah. Whenever we have hordes and hordes of people in obsidian, but they're wearing armor, you know, this is big. We're supposed to very much pay attention to that piece of this.
Yeah. Well, remember too, in the show, and I think this could still happen in the books, in the show, remember, after he's done at the Citadel, he goes back to his house, like his home.
Yeah.
And he takes the wildling, and his dad is like livid, right? Like, oh, some wildling. Mm-hmm. And he's like, all right, see ya. And he takes his ancestral sword.
So sick.
He takes his Valyrian steel sword. I think that moment could happen in the books.
Oh, yeah. I think
Sam will also have a Valyrian steel sword.
Well, it's also a really good metaphorical example, or I should say it's like a good metaphor comparative to like the King Arthur stories of removing the sword from the stone. But Sam's is much more of like, you know, a meta stone in the fact that he was never able to stand up to his father and do what was right for him. But him taking that family sword, the magical sword in this example, from the mantle, from his dad against his will, is the proverbial stone, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, that Samwell is King Arthur.
That's also something that's kind of interesting. We could honestly do a whole breakdown on this at some point, but like the relationship of every main character almost with their parents. Because you think about like, oh, with Sam's dad as a jerk and stuff like that, but we don't really get a lot of Randall Tarley. We don't see him.
We see the effect he's had on his son.
We see the effect, but it's not like the show where you actually see that character. Totally kind of definitely different. But Tyrion goes through like the same type of a thing where he has to deal with his father. Obviously he kills him, right? And then, you know, John thinks a lot about Ned Stark, even though Ned Stark isn't actually his dad, but there's still that relationship there, and that's a driver. And so that's something that's just kind of interesting too about all of these players.
Yeah, and we do.
Even Daenerys, you know, doesn't know a lot about her father, but she's obviously trying to be.
Well, she's super curious about Rhaegar too, right? And she wants to know why her father went mad. Like, that's a very hard. Like, her father led to the downfall of the family. I mean, that's a very hard thing to deal with. We do see Tarly. We do see Randall Tarly is his name, Samwell's dad, I think, in the later books. I think we actually end up seeing him either in Feast or Dance, if I remember correctly. Hopefully I'm not misremembering. Someone will correct me, I'm sure. But we actually end up doing him. And guess what? He's a prick. He's an asshole, just like Samwell makes very obvious. Generational story, this is, for sure. I mean, we see a generation get wiped out with Catelyn, right? Pretty rough. Her family's decimated.
Yeah, totally destroyed.
Yeah, I mean, you got Blackfish and Edmure, but Edmure is a boob, and Blackfish is somewhere. I don't know where what he's doing.
Yeah, he'll show up.
Yeah.
Okay. A few other points here. So then, when the raven lands on his shoulder, it says, "Fair, far, fear." It flapped its wings and screamed along with Gilly. The whites were almost on her. He heard the dark red leaves of the weirwood rustling, whispering to one another in a tongue he did not know. Which is, we know, like the song, like the children speak and all of that stuff. Yeah. So like, they're clear, like it's obvious here that the weirwoods are doing something. And then, you know, what does the raven mean? It's a bit cryptic. Also, a good question. Is it Mormont's raven? Because Mormont's now dead, right? Go, the bird said on his shoulder. Go, go, go. How much at all, if Blood Raven is controlling the events here, is he controlling the Raven's attack, or is it Cold Hands? Is the Raven speaking, or is the Raven speaking, or is it Blood Raven?
I think it's Blood Raven, and I think he's signaling to Cold Hands, I found him. Come here. Fear, yeah, no. Fear, here, maybe. Maybe yeah. A little mishap with the pronunciation. I don't know. Maybe the network's got a little lag, possibly. Right. I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe the bird can only say so much, or it says says words that it thinks so. So then, of course, then you get here. Brother, the shout cut through the night, through the shrieks of 1,000 ravens. Beneath the trees, a man muffled head to heels in molted blacks and grays set astride an elk. Here, the rider called. The hood shadowed his face. It's obviously... Yeah, obviously we know it's a member of the Night's Watch that this person was. Could be a random person, could be, you know, could be Benjen, could be Duncan the Tall. Obviously, all the theories about it. But something else that's kind of interesting is the elk that it's riding, and that the person is riding an elk.
Yes, yeah, so elk has a lot of symbolism back in mythology. So usually it's a mount for a king or a hero or a powerful figure. I'll come back to it after this. But for instance, the Irish elk in folklore is a legendary stag with large antlers that is sometimes depicted being ridden into battle. An Irish elk was the real animal that lived back in the Pliocene epoch. But the Danish have it. The elks have it. It's obviously in Norse. Very, very big. It also wards off evil spirits in Norse mythology. There's a lot of Norse stuff in A Song of Ice and Fire. I would say that the whites count as an evil spirit. So it's almost like a physical embodiment. Like he's actually running after these evil spirits to get them away, which is kind of interesting. And then in The Hobbit, a film trilogy, Thranduil, the king of the woodland realm, rides a large elk into battle. The elk plays a significant role in the final installment of the trilogy of Battle of the Five Armies. So there's plenty of history and mythology to back up the fact that this is very significant and we're supposed to take it as some sort of symbolism. Matt, I have a question and I don't know the answer to it, and I wonder if you do.
Okay.
Did Blood Raven have a brother?
Did Blood Raven? Yeah, he had a shit ton of brothers.
Okay. Could Cold Hands be one of those brothers? We think brother
possibly. He's a bastard of Aegon the Fourth. There's like thousands of brothers.
So hear me out here. We think that he's calling out to Samwell as a brother of the Night's Watch, but what if he's calling out brother to Blood Raven, who's in the crows or the ravens?
Oh, you're saying like it could be a bastard of...
Yeah, that's what I'm kind of thinking.
Well, it could be. We've done the math. It's not possible for... I don't think it's possible for Dunk to be a bastard, because that's one of the theories. I don't think it's possible for Dunk to be a bastard of Aegon the Fourth. I think he would.
I don't think Dunk's a Targaryen. I think it's
because he died in 184. That's too early for Dunk.
Yeah, I mean the easy answer is that Cold Hands is in fact saying brother to Samwell, and it's just
as a brother of the knight.
It's like a random
knight, which also should go to show you that this person. Well, yeah, I guess what you're saying, yeah, is that it could be Blood Raven. But that also would mean that Blood Raven still views himself as a brother of the Night's Watch, or that Cold Hands still views himself as a brother of the Night's Watch.
And if Blood Raven
would imply, again, more sentient than what the whites have, which goes back to like the White Walkers and the whites, as opposed to like whatever the heck Cold Hands is.
Dude, isn't it kind of interesting to think, because like we're talking about it almost being parasitic. Isn't it interesting that if like from this long summer that like maybe some sort of parasitic bacteria or whatever is in like the ice in the far north, like the lands of always winter, and it's infecting the corpses? You know what I mean? Like kind of like the fungus thing in Last of Us. Like, wouldn't that be interesting? Like an ice entity. Okay. Like, let's just pretend that Blood Raven and the Weirwoods are like an earth elemental like force. What if the ice is like has its own thing, is becoming sentient? You see what I'm saying?
Oh, I understand. And yeah, that's something else to think about too, is how because obviously it's like, well, we think about like the Weirwood as like, oh, well, it could be tied to the Great Other and this ice god, but trees and ice don't really
They're different.
Do well, right? Like, what does ice and cold do to trees? it kind of causes them to die, right? I mean,
yeah, winter doesn't necessarily kill them.
Yeah, but the leaves fall off. They lose. They lose. So maybe
a little bit of power. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe they're impacted by the ice.
I like it. I like it. And
it certainly drains them of their power.
Hey, and if you need a fire element, entity, obviously dragons could be a part of that, or lore or whatever else. So it's pretty sick. It's pretty cool to think about.
Yeah. Or maybe the weirwoods represent like balance.
I like that too.
Because when is a tree at its best? It's like, well, a tree is at its best in really like spring. Spring and summer is when a tree is at its best, especially like you think like a fruit tree, like that's when it's pretty, you know. We planted apple trees in my yard. I'm looking at it right now. It's winter here. I'm in Portland. It's not super cold, but there's no apples on that tree.
What about a lemon tree, Matt?
We have a lemon tree too.
A red door?
No, we do actually have a red door. Yes,
I knew it. Red door is red. Yeah, I knew it, dude. Daenerys was in Portland.
The lemon. I will tell you though, the whole lemon tree business. I mean, I live in Portland, so you know, it's like our weather here is in the Pacific Northwest is, you know, it's like 30 to 70, 80. You know, that's like we don't really get into like the 20s, and we don't really get into like 100 days too often in the summer. But our lemon tree, we got to bring it inside in the winter. It's touchy. Can't just do whatever you want with it.
Can't just put it anywhere.
You cannot. If it was outside right now, it'd be dead.
See, Matt is doing actual science to prove his sonic theories.
I am. Yeah. So yeah, again, this chapter, it's a little bit on the shorter side. There's a ton of stuff to talk about. And some of this we've done.
Oh, it's packed.
Yeah. Some of the stuff we've done, you know, big episodes on and things like that. But I mean, what's your biggest takeaway from this, Jimmy?
That the gods are moving behind the scenes, and the supernatural is very real. And I think that they're behind the curtains of this, the weirwoods and the whites and all this stuff is something of I almost want to call it a cosmic battle. We'll just call it a supernatural battle. And I think that the humans are going to find themselves in the middle of it at one point. Now, who's on whose side? We do not know, but Sam the Slayer is a hero for sure.
Yeah. Agreed. I think that's the big takeaway from this chapter. I think people should have, because I know obviously a lot of first time readers, they're reading this and it's like, man, you hit this, and it's like others, wildling, you know, blood raven.
There's a lot to pay attention to.
There's a lot of magic stuff, but to me, the big underlying takeaway, at least for me this time, really was like the Sam.
Yeah.
So the Sam is the person, and all this stuff's happening, and praying for courage is just so cool. I just love it.
That's our dude, man. That's our dude.
Awesome. Okay. Well, in a little bit shorter episode today, but that's kind of all the time we got for today. So next time we will be back, and we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, chapter 47, Arya 9.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We will see you next time. And remember that winter is...